Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, welcome to the Red Men TV. It is the big one. I'm joined by Josh Williams for this one. It is the Arne Slot. First five things that he needs to do at Liverpool Football Club. We'll be running them down from 5 to 1 in levels of importance. Of course, the most important being the last point. This is the definitive Arne Slot guide brought to you by Mr. Josh Williams and by myself, Mr. Chris Pajak. So without further ado, Josh, let's get into it. At number five, that's 10, Chris. At number five, the first thing that he needs to fix is the set pieces.
Yeah.
You having that?
Well, lately it's been our Achilles heel, hasn't it? It's something that we definitely need to fix. And his PSV side are decent at them, specifically in attack, aren't they?
Very good in attack, mate. So we'll go through some of the figures and stuff now. And while we do it, we'll compare Liverpool to Arsenal and Manchester City as well, just for a bit more of a broader understanding of the subject. So we're using a website called The Analyst right now. We're going to look at expected goals four to start off with. So you can see this column here that I'm going to sort by is SPXG, which is set play expected goals. Feyenoord, top in the league, 17.75, but they've actually only scored 13 goals from those set pieces. But Josh, why is the expected goals from the set pieces so important, and why does it tell us that Arne Slot's sides are good at set pieces?
Because from a coaching perspective, the only thing that Slot can impact is the creation of the chance, as in the creating the shot, and from the shot you get XG to indicate what the shot's worth. But Slot can't put the ball in the net. He's reliant on his players to do that. So they've only scored 13 from them, from an XG of about 18, really. That means they just haven't finished to a good enough level, you know, some bad headers in there or something like that. But it shows that in terms of how they're coached, they're probably, well, they are comfortably the best in the league. Yeah, I think the second best is on 13.2.
Yeah.
Followed by Fortuna Sittard on 10.9. So, for a bit of perspective as well, for the Premier League, that's like Everton level set pieces. So,
and they're the best in the league. We've got those figures on the screen for you right now.
Yeah.
Everton 17.02. You're absolutely spot on. It's not quite as good, but Everton have scored 18 goals from those set pieces. In terms of Arsenal, 13.78 XG. In terms of Liverpool, 13.67. In terms of City, 11.55. Now, Arsenal are a bit of an outlier here with 20 goals from their 13 XG. What's that about?
Well, that's just good heading, good finishing, but also potentially an element of like good fortune in there.
An overperformance maybe that might come back.
Yeah, it might sting them eventually. Bad goalkeeping potentially or something like that. So next season they could create the same XG, the same shots, and they only score 12, something like that. So what you look at as like this is probably going to continue is the XG. That's what's going to persist with you. And it looks like Feyenoord are really good at them. Everton, we know, are really good at them. They've just killed us on the back of them.
Everton, I think I'm right in saying, have scored, I think it's around about 50% of their goals this season.
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
From set pieces, which is wild. You know, we've seen us concede goals from corners all season long. So let's move on to the expected goals against from set pieces. Before we do, I just want to, again, I'm going to get the screens in the right places so we can show you the definitive stats. In terms of expected goals against, let's do Feyenoord first. Second best in the league this time, Josh.
Only just up. only just. There's not a great deal in it. There's two sides there, the two best in the league, PSV and the Feyenoord, that are both relatively similar, same level. But what I think is mad is one of the teams has conceded five and the other team's conceded none from very similar shots. So you could put that down to maybe Feyenoord have got a bit of a dodgy goalkeeper. We can look at that in a minute. Maybe players have just finished to a better level against Feyenoord. Maybe PSV have been a bit lucky. But that's the kind of thing that, as I said, that's almost variant, really. That fluctuates, that changes from season to season. But what's repetitive is the XG side. And Feyenoord probably joint best in the league, really, with PSV on the defensive side, which is good for Liverpool.
Okay, and in terms of the Premier League, then Manchester City, the best in terms of shots. Set piece XG, 5.73. Arsenal, second best, 6.43. But you have to go all the way down to, I think it's ninth there for Liverpool, 11.19. Now, we've actually done better than that. We've only conceded 10. Arsenal have only conceded 6. Man City have only conceded 2 goals. And his Feyenoord side have only conceded 5 goals. Bit of an outlier there in terms of the amount of set pieces goals we've conceded. Now, Josh, before we dive into what the reasonings of that, I'm talking set pieces here on the stats. I'm going to talk corners specifically, not free kicks and stuff. Because last season, Liverpool did not concede from a corner all season long. And it was brilliant. And we all knew about it. Anyone who was into the stats knew that Liverpool didn't concede a corner all season long in the Premier League. Yet this season, again, I'm moving to set pieces, but we didn't concede 10 set pieces from just free kicks. Corners were involved. There has been a big swing the other way with Liverpool. What would some of the reasons for that from one season to another be for Liverpool's side?
I'm not too sure, to be honest. It's difficult to pinpoint. I mean, on the defensive line, you know, we've got players who we didn't really make any new signings, really, when you think about it. Like, Kwanzaa's come in a little bit. Bradley's came through. Both the likes of Trent, Robbo, Kanate, Virgil, Alisson, Robbo, they've all been at the club. So they should all know the roles. But potentially, from a midfield perspective, we did lose a few who were quite, like, maybe a bit more disciplined or something like that, compared to the lads who we've got in who are a bit more creative, a bit more forward-thinking, like a McAllister, Szoboszlai, Gravenberg. So it could be a case of something like that, individuals or something. But it is weird, because last season we were generally terrible across the board, but if we didn't see the single corner, it's quite good, that, like.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Probably our strongest point.
I agree with that, mate. And I think you're on the right track there. I think you've nailed it, in fact. And for me, I'll go a step further. Obviously, Bobby Firmino was in the club and he used to be the guy in the line. So Bobby Firmino, if we just quickly go to the tactics board, if I may, used to be in between the centre-halves here. We know Andy Robertson's always defended the front post. Now, Andy Robertson hasn't been available all season long. Bobby Firmino was the guy in the middle of the centre-halves and he's gone missing in terms of the zonal thing. So I think they're two big things for me. Robertson not being there every single week, Bobby Firmino not being there. He has literally been replaced in the middle there by Darwin Nunez, who is a good header of the football, but only wins 36% of his aerial duels over the course of a season. Mm. Not great if you're banging in front of the goalkeeper, by the way. I also think the midfield thing is right. You know, Jordan Henderson's, your Fabinho's, go back at, you know, Wijnaldum's. These guys were drilled.
Even like Milner,
yeah. All of these guys were absolutely drilled to the nth degree because they'd had training and coaching over the course of 5-6 years.
Yeah,
that's the difference. There's no cohesion, I don't think, and there's no time to train, and we don't have a set piece coach either. We're still one of the top clubs that don't. Very un-Liverpool,
yeah.
And so we don't have a set piece coach. Some of the other teams do. Lots of player change, obviously massively important in there. Different front man in terms of Robbo and, you know, whoever else. Maybe it was Joe Gomez, but I've always thought Robbo was on toes all the time and one of the best in the league at that type of stuff. So I think that's had a massive impact, and no training time. Lots and lots of games right up until 2 weeks ago.
And
so they've had time to work on it, have they?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. The training time is definitely in there. Like, if you're integrating an entirely new midfield department, you just naturally have bigger priorities than set pieces to coach them into and to, you know, ingrain them into your ways and all that tactical stuff. So the set pieces are probably still a bit of a backseat, and maybe from a coaching perspective they would take precedence next season or the season after. But Klopp's not going to be here. It's going to be a new man. So it's maybe just that kind of weakness that we've just suffered from a bit this season in comparison to City and Arsenal especially.
Yeah, and we know that, you know, Arsenal scoring lots of goals, they're not conceding many, and that can be a difference maker when you've all very good sides. And so it is interesting there. Right, number four then. Number four, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Josh. Mm. This question is going to rage on all summer long. It has to be one of his top five things that he needs to sort out. We need to know, as fans, is Trent Alexander-Arnold going to be a right back, or is he going to be a midfielder? What are the merits of both?
Yeah,
because we're going to look at the tactics and stuff later, by the way.
It is really hard, isn't it? It's going to be one of them as well, where first pre-season game, the deep dive that follows that first pre-season game will be based on where Trent has played, won't it?
Should we go to it? We'll get press access for it and we'll go.
Yeah, ideally, yeah, I'll go, mate.
We'll try and box that off.
But yeah, it's
making gonna, promises I can't keep. Always good.
It's going to be insistent, though, isn't it? Like, I think not only is it important for the player, obviously, and the team, but it's important for what you're going to do in the window as well. Like, it has a massive impact on Liverpool's window. And even if you just, I mean, this is a bit of a dampener as well, but like, even just, is he definitely staying? Like, that's another thing in there. He's got 1 year left on his deal. That's not out of question. But the more I've watched him, I said to you earlier, the more I've watched him, the more I have got interpreted him on the pitch as he wants to be a midfielder to me. That's what I think anyway. I think he's getting more and more fed up with defensive duties. And listen, that's not good enough. And if you're a midfielder, you still have defensive duties. But I just think he wants to be constantly in the middle of the park,
conducting things.
Yeah, with authority and stuff. And I think he feels personally, I don't think he'd ever say this, but I think he feels like he's outgrown this. And I think he feels like he should be doing a bit of what Kimmich did when Kimmich got to his peak, moved into the middle, starts playing as part of a two. So I think that's definitely a possibility, because Slot favours a two. By the way, if you know, you pronounce his name,
Slot.
I got told that it is basically Slut, which is excellent.
Steve Hall, an honest Slut. Bezzies, they look the same.
They do,
and
sure,
they've got naughty surnames.
Yeah, but that's what I got told, so we can... Are we going to keep that for the rest of the episode or not?
I don't think I can.
No. Not safe for work and all that stuff.
No, I don't think I can do it. All right, well, listen, we know he's going to be playing a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3.
Yeah.
They're the two formations. Without diving into the tactic board too much right now, if Trent was to play 4-3-3, where does he play?
It's really difficult. Really difficult. You could play him as the six. You could play him as the right side of eight. You could play him as the right back. It's genuinely... I personally haven't liked the idea of a right side of eight as much as other people. People view that as like he can be out De Bruyne. But I don't think Trent is that great receiving the ball in a block, in a small space with his back to goal, potentially. I think he's better looking into the block, you know, assessing the best option, where the space is, and he can be a bit more long range with his passing, a bit more of a conductor from outside of the busiest areas of the pitch. So personally, he'd be a six or a right-sided fullback for me. Uh-huh. But I don't know, you know, I really don't. What about you?
Well, in a 4-3-3 formation, I think right-back is probably the place. Only because in the 4-3-3 formation, I think him doing that is not too dissimilar to him doing that.
Mm.
And I think that in a 4-3-3 is a lot of running sideline to sideline that maybe isn't suitable to Trent. And I don't really see him as the eight when we've got tons of eights anyway. So I'd see him probably more as that.
Yeah.
In a 4-2-3-1, I can absolutely see him now, because he's got a mate.
Yeah, I agree.
And I can still see him there as well.
Yeah. See, the thing with the way Slot plays, the way
Slot,
the way
you've got to say it like that as well.
Okay, sound. The way he's built his game at Feyenoord, it. I said last week, it's a little bit De Zerbi in the sense that he builds predominantly through the middle,
mm-hmm.
and he uses his back two and his midfield two to kind of like, you know, the centre half will play a pass into the midfield, one of the midfielders, and with his first touch, he'll play it round the corner to his next midfielder, and then we're off.
Yeah. So it's So you're what you're talking about is ladder passes up the field, aren't you?
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. Everyone's kind of staggered a little bit. So even though it's a midfield two and a number 10 ahead, or it's a six with two eights, regardless, it's always kind of going to look a bit like, you know, a kind of staggered ladder, like you said. So the way in which De Zerbi does it, you know, it'll be Lewis Dunk into Casado, and then Casado will play around the corner to McAllister, and then you're off like that. And Pascal Gross has been doing it more this season, Billy Gilmore and players like that. But if you're going to build through the centre like that, if you're going to keep doing that at Anfield, one of your best progressors is over here, and Slut seems to use that as a bit more of a dummy.
Slut!
He seems to use his fullbacks as like almost dummies. What's the word? Like a
decoy.
A decoy, yeah, almost. And you build through the middle. You don't want to build away from Trent. You want Trent to be involved in the build-up, surely. Mm-hmm. So that's why I can see him in one of these. You know,
I like it.
Not that one, actually, but the midfield two, certainly. I've said before, too, I can see a midfield two of Trent and McAllister. I actually don't mind the sound of that either.
I like it, mate. I do. I like it. It makes perfect sense the way that you've said it there. Should we move on to number three, then? This is probably one of the biggest. It's the third most important, I think. because it's number three. It is control, or another way of putting that would be maybe a change of style of play after so many years of...
with the ball.
Klopp. Yeah, with the ball, absolutely. Okay, control. I mean,
we do need more of this.
Well, one of the things is we don't control the games well enough. For a team that has a lot of possession, we don't control the start of games very well, Josh, do we?
No. No, it's been a recurring theme, the start of games, for going into the last season. You know, even first game of the season this year, the season against Bournemouth at Anfield, we concede first. You know, so that's with everyone kind of on it. Everyone's fit and pretty much first game of the season at home, and we concede first. So it has been a recurring theme where when teams kind of have a go at us, you do realise the spaces that we kind of afford. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it stems from our use of the ball. And when we're in possession, it is quite chaotic. It's kind of like, you know, a lot of players have an element of creative freedom where you can take risks pretty much anywhere. But if you're taking risks anywhere, you are not guaranteed to be set if you lose the ball and then you get done on the break. They get a shot away or whatever, you might concede. And I think in comparison to City and Arsenal, they've been just so scared of the transition against them that they only take risks, they only accelerate the game when everything is perfect. Everything, you know, they've made 10 passes by this point. Everyone knows where they are, so that if they lose the ball, everyone regains it. You start the next attack. Liverpool, I think, have been a bit more entertaining, a bit better to watch because of that prospect of a long ranger or a moment of brilliance. But weaker on the defensive side because of that. So this is where the control comes in. I think to an extent you need to prioritise the control over the shot creation in certain moments, and you need to ensure that, like, if we do lose the ball here, where are we?
Yeah.
And Liverpool, I've been saying it all season, but also the first week of the season, Liverpool are a bit too impatient, a bit too hectic, and you need a bit of chill in there. And looking at Feyenoord, you know, over the past week, they do seem to have an element of that where, like, you know, the centre-halves will put the studs on the ball. Not like Deserby's Brighton. Deserby's Brighton, yeah. Wait.
Come out to us.
Exactly. Come out to us, then we'll build around you. We're not in a rush. If this man does have time and space on the ball, he's not just going to panic and lob it forward or something like that.
But they do utilise that as well.
They do with the
target man sometimes, but that's not plan A.
No, it is a bit more, you know, just timing it right in terms of when you accelerate the game so that if it goes wrong, you're not getting killed going the other way. And I think that's been one of Liverpool's biggest problems. But I think it's an understandable problem when you look at Liverpool's coach, because Klopp's that guy. Klopp's got an element of chaos about him. He always has. That's what we've loved about him. But the modern Premier League, you'll get stung. Yeah, if you don't really take care of that.
Okay, well, let's take a look at... We'll go back over to the analyst again, and we're going to compare two sides, side by side. And first of all, on the left-hand side of my screen, we're looking at passes per sequence and direct speed. Now, you can see Liverpool's passes per sequence is around about 4.2, and the direct speed is around about 1.9-ish, give or take. If we go over to Manchester City, bottom corner, really slow, no speed whatsoever. Arsenal, more passes per sequence and less direct speed, but well under the average. Obviously, Liverpool's up there. In terms of Feyenoord, you can see their passes per sequence are actually less than Liverpool's, 3.8, because this is comparatively to the rest of the Eredivisie. Liverpool's was 4.2, but the direct speed actually isn't too dissimilar. It's 1.8 as opposed to 1.9, essentially. But in terms of the league, two things this shows me, Josh. Mm. First of all, the Premier League is a much faster league. That's the data that's telling me that. Yeah. I knew it already. You knew it already.
Yeah.
But we can see it. And in terms of their league, they are more on the Arsenal axes of slowing into it with a little bit of direct speed than maybe a Manchester City, but certainly not as direct as Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, they do try things, and they're not like... I think Alonso's Leverkusen, for example, were a lot more, you know, careful and methodical, short passes. We accelerate the game really particularly.
Yeah.
I think Feyenoord are a bit more open to the elements of chance, a bit more like willing to create out of nowhere, but they are a bit more chilled out than Klopp's Liverpool. I don't think they're as direct as Klopp's Liverpool. There's elements of that, but they're just not quite as nuts. And I think, funnily enough, specifically in reference to Nunes, mm-hmm. I've said this to a few people. I wrote a piece on Nunes last week on my Substack. I actually think he's... don't get me wrong, his performances have generally been okay, and he gets lots of shots and stuff, which I've always suggested is a good thing. But I think the way in which Liverpool play, it's so nuts. I don't think it's helped him. I think he would benefit from a cooler environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would allow him to have more composure. So I'm really interested to see Nunes under someone who ideally will keep things a little bit more controlled as opposed to chaotic, because Nunes is naturally chaotic anyway. He doesn't need any more of that.
No, absolutely not. Like, and it's going to be so interesting. We're going to talk Nunes a lot more a little bit later on. Just going to take you back to the analyst now and just have a quick look at zones of control. So Liverpool, obviously, sort of bang centre of the screen here. You can't see my mouse, unfortunately. But bang in the centre of the field. So we have control over pretty much all the field, apart from right in their penalty box and the two... corner positions. Feyenoord only right in front of their penalty box. They dominate everywhere else. The grey ones are neutral. You can see, actually, can't you, where Liverpool are attacked on by the two red squares behind the fullbacks.
Yeah.
Feyenoord have managed to make sure that other teams can't do that with this 4-2-3-1/4-3-3 that Arne Slot plays, but very similar in terms of zones of control.
Yeah, and I think that stems from their defensive game. You know, I think one of the things with appointing this fella is, I think we've kind of labelled it as like a bit of a continuity appointment, where you're doing your best to keep Klopp in the building, even though he's left, if you see what I mean. Like, he's very similar in his defensive ways, in his ability to coach a team to press high up the pitch, the high line. It's very intense. It's zonal as well, for the most part. So it feels very Liverpool in the way that they're going to press and keep you away from their own goal, and that allows them to control these zones and see most of the ball as well.
Absolutely. So we look at next at the PPDA. It's passes per defensive action. It's essentially to tell us our intensity of the side, isn't it, and how quickly they try and regain the ball. So
yeah.
For Feyenoord on the right-hand side this time, they're second in the list, 10.3 PPDA. For Liverpool, we're second in the list in our league, 8.8. Both high-pressing sides, Liverpool more so than Feyenoord. We do expect that when Slot does take over at Liverpool, though, he will be very much high. And I think the interesting thing here is, in terms of the tactics, I think we're going to see a little bit more Manchester City. than we do Liverpool. I think we're going to see a lot of bodies in and around the area. And I just wonder whether there's a couple of players that spring to mind where they might have to work a bit harder in terms of the press. I think Nunes is brilliant at it. Diaz is brilliant at it. Is Mo now good at it?
I think the thing with Mo, I think he's good at the press. He's intelligent with the press. But he never, ever puts a foot in. He doesn't actually win the ball, ever. And I think that's part of the reason why he never gets injured, because he's sensible sometimes when it comes to, I'm not putting my foot in that, you know, it's going to hurt me. That's why Jota is out every week. Jota's our best presser and regainer of the ball, in my opinion, probably. But he misses games all the time because he's so much of a grafter, almost like a warrior. So Salah, it's a difficult one like that, you know. I think he can probably up the intensity and stuff like that, but he's 32 now. Mm-hmm. So you don't want him to pick up more injuries as a result of pressing a bit more for us, do you? So
there's one man, it's the Cristiano Ronaldo argument at Manchester United. There's one man let the system down.
I don't think we're at that level yet with Salah, but when that's the case, you need to think about moving him on. So if that's the case anytime soon, I think the recent news surrounding him, Liverpool intend to keep him and all that, I think that's interesting to me. I don't think it's as straightforward as that.
Oh, yeah. I was sat here saying it on the podcast, mate. There's no way you turn around and go, he's off.
He's
off. So come in with the bids. You say, we believe in him. He's still a £150 million player, by the way. He's definitely going to be our guy next year because we know he's going to score 45 goals. Prize him away, if you will. It's 3D chess, it's 4D chess, whatever you want to say.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Which brings us on neatly to number two. Sorry about that mic issues. The problem with live content, unfortunately. I haven't had one of them in a long time. In fact, it's the first time you've seen that. Anyway, number two. The defence, Josh. Mm. Do you want to start us off with some high-quality visuals?
Well, they're a bit less high-quality than usual because they're not Redmen themed, are they?
It's all right, mate.
These must. This is final right this season. I've had a deeper look into them lately just to see how good they are on the defensive side. And it looks good. So this is Feyenoord this season. This is Europe's big six leagues. So it's England, France, Germany, Italy, Spain and the Netherlands. And this is passes into the penalty box conceded per match. And as you can see, Feyenoord are the best of the lot. That's the top 25, I think. Liverpool, as you can see, just 25th there. Feyenoord, the best in Europe, followed by Arsenal, who I think we all know are very defensively good, followed by PSV, Manchester City. Slight surprise with Sociedad and then Leverkusen. So that is an indicator from a defensive perspective of how difficult it is to get into Feyenoord's penalty box. Massive caveat that it is the Eredivisie. So, you know, when he comes to Liverpool probably won't be where Feyenoord are. It's not going to be as simple as that. But that still is an indicator that Slot can basically coach a defence to be difficult to penetrate, difficult to progress through. And that kind of takes us on to the next viz as well, which is really similar, really. Same six leagues, still this season. And this is progressive passes conceded per match. Feyenoord, the second best in this department now, behind only Manchester City. Again, PSV, Arsenal, Sociedad. All these teams are difficult to play through. And when you think about it, that's literally the crux of defending, really. Yeah. Obviously, you can say it's not conceding goals, but if you don't want to concede goals, you don't want to concede shots. The way you don't concede shots is by not letting players get into your penalty box, and the way you don't let players get into your penalty box is by letting them progress from deeper areas. So the fundamentals, the starting point is don't let them progress up the pitch. Feyenoord are the second best in Europe at doing that. So I think that's really encouraging, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, listen, obviously you have to make that caveat of Eredivisie and all that type of stuff, but like, it does beg the question for me, whenever someone does that, I'm like, yeah, but the coach.
Yeah.
When the coach has got better players, he can coach them well. And that's, so, yes, Feyenoord aren't going to be as good defensively probably as Arsenal, as PSV Eindhoven, but the coach is doing the work that makes them difficult.
Exactly.
And the coach can be transferred, not the 11 players that are doing the business.
Exactly.
But what he can do is he can coach those players up, and hopefully Liverpool become more difficult to play through. There are other questions as well, but before that, we've got one final viz.
Yeah, so obviously we've seen that Feyenoord are difficult to progress through. They're difficult to penetrate their penalty box. And that then translates when it comes to actual shots and expected goals. So this is a scatter plot here. On the bottom axis, you've got shots faced per match. And on the side axis, you have non-penalty XG against per match from those shots. And as you can see, again, Feyenoord right up there with the very best in Europe, PSV, City, Arsenal. And the one circle that I haven't labelled in the best five, that's Leverkusen. So Feyenoord right up there in terms of like being really well coached. Mm-hmm. And you can see the influence there of the playing style and of the coach. You can also see Liverpool just kind of a little bit more in there, a bit more of a cluster. But if you think about how Liverpool can improve, how Liverpool can get more points next season, and how Liverpool crucially can concede fewer goals, it's by climbing a bit towards Feyenoord and Arsenal and City. And that, you could argue, is why Liverpool have lost the league in the end. You know, I know it's been finishing and stuff, but the finishing fluctuates throughout the season. It's now tailed off. That's why we're suffering now. But all season, we've been going behind a lot because of that. And if we face fewer shots, if we're better on the defensive side next season, we'll improve points-wise. And you can see Feyenoord there really good at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Had a super chat there from Hawks. Hawks, mate, thank you so much for that one, too. My favourite show of the week, bringing some positive hints to the future that are much needed. Thanks, fellas. Thank you very much, Hawks, as always, mate. Back onto the defensive side of things then, Josh. Obviously, we've had question marks for a while now about whether Andrew Robertson is good enough to be a left-sided centre-back. Are you happy with Andy Robertson in Arne Slot's formation? Do you think it's as much of a need as we've thought maybe for the last 12 months?
It's interesting. It depends how he's going to do things. Like, you know, I know we're looking at Feyenoord and how they're playing under Slot and things like that. But, you know, he could employ different things when he comes to Liverpool. Like, I know they've been doing inverted fullback stuff where I think it's usually the right back tucks inside. And they form kind of a front five, you know, the 3-2-5 or the 2-3-5 that we've been touching on for the past year on Merseyside. So it depends on what he's doing. But for the most part, in Feyenoord, the left back just stays as a left back, really. Sometimes he'll tuck in as part of a back three, but I think he stays as a left back. So I don't think it would change too much for Robertson based on what he's doing now. But he is used to playing a left-footed centre half, though. Which we don't have. We have Van Dijk, obviously, that's great, but Van Dijk's, is he 32, 33,
yeah, I think
something 32. Like that. So that could be a transfer option, but I do think we probably need some kind of reinforcement in the back line, centre half, but it'll be interesting to see what Fuzzy prefers when we get him in.
Absolutely. For me, I think the priorities have gone from maybe having that left back sort of pseudo left sided centre half to more of a right, okay, Matip's not going to get a new contract at Liverpool. Kwanzaa's still young, although absolutely brilliant. Konate has his injury problems and another season of having those injury problems, whereas last year we were like, oh, we'll be all right, we'll be all right. No, we weren't. We weren't at all. Konate's injury prone as hell. So I think this might be the priority from the back four now, the centre-half. And I think if you are going to get a more an upgrade on a centre-half, a better ball-playing centre-half who still has the ability to cover wide space and cover back here and there is probably where Liverpool will go. I do think Honda can do it, but I also think that a new manager coming in has a place where he can improve, and I think that might be, in the back line, the easiest place to improve for us.
Yeah, I am definitely expecting a new centre-back, 100%. But I think Kwanzaa has had a good season. It'd be interesting to see how he felt if we went and signed a right-sided centre-half. And looking at the way Edwards, in particular, I know it's now Hughes kind of in charge of it mainly, but the way Edwards has done it, he's really conscious of blocking a path like that and reducing the minutes of academy talent, wonder kid or whatever. So it will be interesting to see how he does that, because Van Dijk is still playing every single game. So if you're only signing a left-sided centre-half, he's getting domestic cups. You know, he's not getting many minutes, basically.
No. I suppose the other thing that's in Kwanzaa's favour is we have seen him play left-sided centre-half.
Yeah, that
does play into his favour. So maybe he's one, like the first name, that backs up both sides a little bit, and maybe you could get more minutes that way. I mean, he was probably used a lot more than Klopp thought he was going to be used this season, but he stood up to the challenge and deserves to be used just as much next season. But we did see that when Kurt Jones came in all those years ago. He got overused, and then he got underused, and then he probably found his way over the course of a three-year spell.
We should also say as well, and I know he hasn't really played there at all lately, but you do have Joe Gomez also, who is like a kind of break glass option at centre half if you need it. So it is going to be interesting to see how the new fellas in charge interpret the squad, because obviously Edwards was in charge for a lot of the build, but there's been recent business that he has not overseen. Hughes is interpreting it completely for the first time, so it'll be interesting to see what his take is on the areas in need and stuff. But I don't think it's that clear cut. I think centre half, yes, but what centre half? Who knows? Six, God knows. Is Trent going to be an option there? Front line, you got Salah, you got forwards who can't finish by the looks of it. Diaz getting linked, so there's loads of questions there, and it'd be interesting to sit in a room with them and just see how they construct it.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall in those rooms. Okay, brings us on to number one. Broad strokes here, people, the forwards. We could have done it as just Mo Salah, we could have done it as just Ibu Konate, but we wanted to encompass as much as possible and talk about the tactics as we go through. So, in terms of the forward line, I think it's fair to say, Josh, that we've got a bit of a target man who's the tip of the spear for Arne Slot and Feyenoord at the moment. We've got a bit of a left-wing forward who's a bit of a creator, maybe tucks inside a little bit there. And on the right hand side, we've got a bit of a goal scorer, actually. So, first things first, my initial thought was, well, we'll have to flip that.
Yeah.
The right needs to be the creator because it's Luis Diaz and he ain't the goal scorer. Mm. And Mo Salah's been the goal scorer. But makeup wise, from the three players, seems to fit Arne Slot's system.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how he does it. Obviously, we've got a lot of forwards in there who are really inclined to get shots, get really good shots in good areas, but we don't really have many wide players, you know, who are comfortable being out here, want to engage in 1v1 duels and stuff like that. So to see how he does that is going to be interesting. And obviously we know that a modern thing is to attack with basically a bank of five players. You've already got four if you're using 4-2-3-1, because you've got your striker, your 10, your two wide players. And it'll be interesting to see who the fifth is going to be for Slot. Would it be a high-flying right-back where they form the safety net? Would it be one of the two sixes where they kind of join like that? Or would it be the left-back even, where the left-back joins and they kind of form the safety net? So he's got different ways of doing it. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how he gets the most out of the forwards in particular, because they're not that like what he's currently dealing with. Yeah. I think the Federal Prince is typical striker. You know, he wants to score goals, but the forwards, the lads who are like playing out wide and cutting inside, and that they're different, I think, to the PSV option, to the Feyenoord option.
Okay, well, let's talk through the players individually then. A number 10, give me three names that could play that position.
For Liverpool. Szoboszlai, Gakpo, McAllister.
Not Elliot.
I think Elliot could play.
But you asked for three, Chris.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly, yeah.
It's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
Would he have been the fourth name on your list?
Probably, yeah. Yeah, probably.
Okay. Two names that can play that right wing position.
Salah. And it's going to have to be Elliot, but I will also say Szoboszlai as an option over there.
Like it. Left-hand side?
Diaz, Jota and Gakpo can play that one.
And up front?
Nunes. I don't like Gakpo there in this because for the same reasons I wouldn't like Firmino in it. If you've got Firmino being a false nine, you don't want that. So if you're playing with a false nine, usually it's a midfield three like that so that the false nine can have all this to himself. So if you're playing with a 10, you could get in the way of each other unless it's going to be like that. But then you're playing a bit strikerless there unless these are doing that maybe or something. But
I think we're overcomplicating that. It doesn't for Feyenoord, does it? It is very much tip of the spear type of stuff from the centre forwards. Okay, question for Arne Slot over the course of this summer. We've seen the news. Liverpool are going to keep Mohamed Salah. I don't believe it.
No, I don't. I think it's absolute. It's virtually certain, in my opinion, anyway. Looking at like how Edwards tends to run the ship and stuff, and with Hughes in charge and FSG kind of.
Is he just too old, Josh?
It's not even that. It's more. There's no way he will go for free. That's the thing. So if this summer he refuses to extend, he gets sold, in my opinion. If he extends, sounds another season, we show him next summer. But he's definitely getting sold at some point because he's worth too much. And when you think about the Liverpool model, £100 million around that, something sort of 32-year-old player who's past his peak, or he is past his peak. So he's definitely getting sold. So Liverpool won't go through another season with him unless he signs a contract extension this summer. And whether he does or not, whether you want to give him reduced terms, whatever, I don't know. I don't know what the.
I can't imagine that Salah would take reduced terms personally, and I don't think he probably should. He's still our best player. But I think there is a point, a natural point, without being an arse about it, where it's best for both people. And I think the data-driven approach will tell us, because we can see it in the data that we see, that Mohamed Salah is declining. It might be a slow decline, but it's a decline nonetheless. Now, they'll have the numbers. If they offer him a new contract, then...
See, I looked into this a couple of months ago, right, and he was not declining in the numbers. Because, and I said at the time, he's fine. Makes sense to extend. He's had a small injury, but output-wise, he's fine. Now, yeah, he's probably declining when it comes to like physical stats, things like that, availability naturally. You know, he's playing fewer minutes. That's not a good thing at all. But in terms of his goal output, like his non-penalty expected goals plus his expected assists, he's currently on 0.96 per 90. That is his best ever.
Yeah, but this is you're judging one metric there, and I think when you look at the grander scheme of high intensity sprints and fucking all that type of stuff everything else, it probably points to what you've said. It's a physical decline more than anything else.
And his finishing as well lately has obviously not been very good. But I think that is something that just goes like that a little bit. So he will naturally be declining when it comes to dribbling. For example, he's not taking on as many men as he was. But that's a fact with any winger as he gets older. It just happens all the time. But in terms of his tangible end product, his goals and assists, which is what you need from a forward. And see how much he's shooting here. 3.7 shots per 90 he's on. So that's about his average over the past eight seasons is 3.7. So he's still bang on line with that. So if you'd never seen him play and you was looking purely at the numbers, you'd be like, he's fine for the most part. But he is declining in some departments, but it depends how much weight you put on them. I think the big ones are the goals and assists, because he's a forward. That's where you get your points. That's where you get repaid for paying him so much. So I don't know. I think what I would be worried about is, based on what we've seen the past couple of weeks / months, you can extend based on this season. But if the fall off a cliff happens, or is happening now, and we have to carry him for the whole of next season, and he's playing like an hour, and then missing the next game, and then and he's not quite delivering or whatever, and he's not pressing as much or something, that's what you don't want. Yeah. You never want that. So
no, you can't. You've got it. And Sir Alex Ferguson was brilliant at selling players that were just cresting the hill in terms of their peak performance, weren't they? So Liverpool have to do that, and because he's worth so much money, it will be interesting. If he extends, then there's no decline.
I think
Edwards and Richard Hughes will know that.
I think Real Madrid as well got this right with Ronaldo. But they did sell him at a point where he went to the Juventus and still did really well. Like, he went to Juve, scored 21 in his first season, then 31 in the second season, and then 29 in the season after. So he's still doing the business.
Still doing it now, mate.
Yeah, technically, yeah. But as a player, though...
He's bounced back in a really poor league.
But as a player, though, all-round game, you're carrying them more and more every season, because he's not doing anything else. So if Slot's going to come in and revitalise Liverpool and, you know, kind of regenerate this intense pressing approach, and you've got a lad who doesn't want to run anymore or something.
Or can't.
You know, I'm not saying he's at that quite that level yet, but that's a big, you know, something to decide.
Yeah, and whether you can teach an old dog new tricks as well is obviously maybe something that comes into it. Okay, we'll move on then. We've got Luis Diaz up next. I personally think that this guy's been our best player, and I said on the podcast, and I sounded terrible for saying it, so apologies, I'm going to say it again to you. He's not good enough to be our best player.
I can see what you mean, yeah.
And he's the foil for the other two banging in 50 goals a season.
Yeah, and I think out of them all, I do like watching him. I like him as a player. I think he's arguably the most intense against the ball of all of them, in terms of like just running himself into the ground. I think Jota's the best at winning the ball, probably. But Diaz is you can tell he's a Klopp player. You know, he's got that way about him. But I think he's 27. And those output numbers I've just been mentioning there, despite being Liverpool's best player, he is the worst for that. So he's one of them who can play well, and you check the numbers and he's had two shots. Nunes plays awful. You check the numbers, he's shot 9 times and he's at the bar for them or something like that, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I think out of them all, he'd be the one that I would understand Liverpool selling the most. If he replaces Mbappe, I can see it from all parties. And then you get someone in who is just as good, ideally, with more output and is younger.
Yeah.
So that's what I would be interested in doing if possible. But at the same time, this is crucial. So one of the biggest concerns I had, and I said this before a little bit, is when it comes to Slot, he's very inspired by Guardiola, right? In the sense that he does everything he can to create 1v1s out wide, using a really sensible game where he builds through the middle, as we said, you know, those kind of wall passes and stuff. Number 10 there. The right back comes in at times, Gertrude, I think it is. And it's all about getting the ball to these lads. Two balls on the pitch. Getting the ball to these lads, and then they drive at you, and they get to here, cutbacks, score. That's very fine odd, right? One of the problems with that is the way in which Liverpool have recruited forwards over the past couple of years, and Ian Graham has publicly said this, you recruit forwards based on the shots they get, because that's what matters. You are playing them up front. They have to score goals. Can they dribble and all that stuff is secondary, almost. because of that, Liverpool have got like Jota, Salah to a certain extent, Nunes, Gakpo probably comes into it. These are players who have had good shots, get good shots, but don't really dribble. And if you put them up against the fullback directly, it's a flip of a coin as to whether they'll beat them or not. Whereas Guardiola has like Doku, who can only dribble and that's it. But he's boss at it, so it works system wise. So how Slot will adjust to the forwards Liverpool have got is interesting. And I think out of them all, Diaz is probably the only one who you could get him in them situations with a fullback.
Oh, he'd rush.
And he would kill him. He would kill a fullback. Everyone else, I don't think they would.
No, I agree with that.
So
okay.
It's interesting.
Final person. I don't know where we're going with this one, Josh. I've known you a long time now, mate. Darwin Nunes. Sell easily him. Upgradable. Oh!
What are you missing?
Oh, there we go.
Yeah. I'm not turning yet. Everyone's waiting for that day.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
We're over here. Say, come join us.
To be fair, that Everton... Come join us. That Everton moment, mate. That's the closest I've been. I was on my feet.
It was fucking dumb.
Yeah, it was just...
To be honest with you.
It was painful, mate. My boot nearly went through the telly. And I weren't even wearing boots, but... I think he's safe, personally. I think he's another season without question. I think he gets a lot of shots. He's very intense. He can run in behind. Arguably the best availability of all the forwards, which is important. Slot gets the most out of strikers, usually. He's doing well with Jimenez at the minute. So I don't think it's that much of a problem. The only issue is, naturally, he is a bit limited when he's coming into these areas.
And that's the one thing that I think... Boy.
If you're using a 10, he doesn't have to do that as much.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to link naturally.
No,
but he, you know.
From what I was... Yeah, I think you're right. I think for me, he ticks a lot of the boxes that Slot wants.
Mm.
The one that he doesn't is his link-up play. And I do... From what I've watched the final, I've seen them hit the front man from distance. And that is a bit of a concern for me in terms of Darwin Nunes, because... He's almost in the Sturridge vein of, I'm going to pretend I'm going for this header.
But there has been games, though, we've been at them, where he can hold the ball. We've seen him do it.
And bring players in.
But yeah, I think his link play on the ground is more of a concern for me. Mm. Some weeks he just decides to wear Timberland boots rather than his Nike boots. And the ball just kind of bounces off him a little bit, or he falls over or something like that, which is just so annoying, because it's like folks have had him on my Substack recently, and I likened him to a baby giraffe, just the way he moves across the pitch and that, and it's weird. But this is why I said earlier that if you're installing a bit more of a calm and composed approach to attacking, that I think that will benefit him. I think the chaos that surrounds him at the minute, in a good way really sometimes, doesn't help him, because he's already like that. So it's
fueling the fire, aren't you?
Exactly.
The one thing I would say is when you get into these positions here, God, I'd rather switch him out for somebody else.
But the thing is, though, the thing is, if you can consistently create that, then at least when the ball's here, he knows it's coming.
Yes.
He can set himself. He knows it. I think that's part of the problem with Liverpool. It's one of the reasons why Liverpool have got a great attack, you know, as we can show in the numbers. But it's also part of the reason why he never seems ready.
I've said this all, well, for half the season now, he goes, the pass doesn't come, and he has to go again, and he's offside.
Yeah.
That is, for me, a lack of cohesion with the forward players. It's a problem with how many injuries we've had, how many midfielders have changed and everything else. It's very easy to thread the ball to Darwin Nunes. Do it at your first available opportunity. All he wants.
Yeah.
So I take your point there. I think you're probably right. I'd actually much rather have Jota in there. Mm. And I think Jota links up better than Darwin Nunes. But Jota's availability is a bag of wank. So that ain't happening anytime soon. Darwin Nunes is the guy. I do wonder whether we will see just one more season of Darwin Nunes and we'll make a decision at the end of next season. That is always going to be in the back of my mind. I do not see that Arne Slot's going to change the centre-forward next season. You know, I've seen lots of people talking about Victor Gyökeres, or however you pronounce it, from Sporting, and other players that have been linked. I just don't see that that's going to be the case. I think there's other issues, and coaching is probably one of them. You know, and listen, when you think about the right wing, a player that does beat players, Ben Doak.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's obviously out at the moment. And, you know, let's talk. Let's show this Viz one before we move on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is just the same Viz that we showed earlier, scatter plots, but this is in attack. So this is shots per match and non-penalty XG per match of, you know, attached to those shots. And as I said, this is attack in Europe's top six leagues. And Feyenoord, orders, as you can see, are right up there. They can generate a lot of chances, similar to Liverpool. But I think Feyenoord's are a bit more like almost pre-planned, a bit more premeditated. Mm-hmm. PSV, again, off the scale, which is why they're winning the league. Bayern Munich are up there, Leverkusen, City. So you can see, by the way, through all these visits, why Liverpool have appointed this guy with an analytics approach. This guy's absolutely shown up in the numbers, 100%. It's just obvious. He's got their dominant playing style. He's got evidence of it now, a good few seasons. So Liverpool, you can see why they've got him in. But there's just one or two little questions, like the wingers especially, and Trent, potentially Nunes, who's going to play as your 10? Mm. You know, these are just unanswered questions for them to think about over the summer.
So there you go, that has been the deep dive for this week. We actually did probably another 15 minutes on the tactics on this show, but it is so visual, it is only going to be on youtube.com/TheRedMenTV. I really hope you've enjoyed this show. I hope it has been, as promised, the definitive Arne Slot first five things for you. We tried our hardest to give you this content. If you've enjoyed it, get in touch with Josh at Distance Covered on Twitter, and myself at Mr. Blood Red, or use at TheRedMenTV. Thank you so much for listening, for supporting the show, and I'll see you next time. Ta-ra.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.